So here we are. This is Project Herpetoculture Podcast, episode number 68. This is our first attempt at a live episode, which is fun. We're excited about this. Very curious to see how it goes. And as usual, we're going to go through our standard housekeeping before we dive in. And first, I want to give a shout out to Dylan and the Animals at Home Network for hosting our podcast. Although this is live, this will also be posted after the fact on our standard stream, so you'll be able to find it on all the usual podcast platforms. I also want to give a shout out to our sponsors. So we have Custom Reptile Habitats, and they are makers of premium PVC reptile enclosures. We have an affiliate link for them posted in our bio, and if you make a purchase through that link, we will receive a small commission at no additional cost to you. We always appreciate that when those come through. We also have Cold Blooded Caffeine, and they are roasters of delicious coffees from all over the world. They have an awesome private label for us, which is a light roast from Wanda. Highly recommend trying it if you like kind of more floral, light, fruity coffees, as I tend to enjoy. But any coffee you try from them, if you use the code PROJECTHERP, you'll receive 10% off your order. We also have Fairy Tale Dragons. That's Heather Moy and Ron St. Pierre, true legends of herpetoculture, producing some of the finest bearded dragons in the world, alongside a bunch of other cool obscure herpetofauna. So give them a follow. And if you're looking for bearded dragons, look no further than Fairy Tale.
Legendary.
Absolutely. And lastly, our newest sponsor, we have Tamura Designs. And Tamura makes some of the finest enclosures, habitat systems out there, including some of these incredible condos, which you can see right over here. This is what I use for rearing all of my baby herps here. All those are full of Spilotes right now, but they're also great for my Pelecris and all kinds of other stuff. And they also are really perfectly suited for smaller species of herp. In addition to that, they produce larger enclosures as well and awesome deli cup displays. I just had one that I used at Pomona, my first deli cup display. So it felt like, oh, wow, I'm moving up in the world of herpetoculture. So
the real deal.
The real deal, a deli cup display and from Tamura. So if you're in the market for any of that, use the code herpetoculture and you will receive 15% off a single item in your order, which is pretty awesome because they don't do that often. And lastly, I want to say thank you to Happy Dragons. Our partners at Happy Dragons have made this possible. Obviously, we are on their Twitch channel right now doing this. And we're really stoked about Happy Dragons and what they're doing. We've got some really exciting stuff coming up. I'm going to switch to a little graphic here. You can see our schedule for quarter one here with Happy Dragons. This is our streaming calendar. So obviously today we're doing our live podcast. Next will be a webinar stream about researching your herp. That will be on the 20th. And if you look there on the screen, you can see some other fun stuff coming up in February and March, including some more live Q&A type things and webinars. And yeah, of course, I also forgot to give Charlie a shout out. So I'm going to do that now.
Oh, Charlie. Dude. Unbelievable.
I know, it's terrible. Charlie is one of my dearest friends, and he is the one who edits our audio. He provides our incredible theme music, and he's just an all-around legend. So thanks to Charlie for helping us out and all of that.
Let's go, Chuck.
Chuck D. All right, man. So, Phil, how you doing, man? We're doing this live.
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. It's kind of remarkable. I don't know if it's fully sunk in. I'm kind of watching out my window because we are expecting some. Oh, look at that sick mug, dude. Whoa. We're expecting some pretty cold weather here over the next week. And it's kind of funny, you know, from where I am here in Denver, you can kind of see the mountains. And for the last few days, when it's gotten really cold, we've seen there's like these clouds like hanging right over the mountains, just kind of hanging there. And now they're like making their way eastward across the Front Range. And I'm just like, oh man, it's supposed to be like -2 for the next like 5 days in a row. And I'm just like, not ready for that. I'm not ready for the cold and having to commute and you know, make my moves in the snow. It gets kind of tricky for me because I have to drive a lot, but it's okay. And I'm still just at the very tail end. I still am coughing just a little bit from the unfortunate and absolutely devastating flu that I had over the last week. That sadly kept me from participating in the sake of our conversations today, which is the Pomona show in LA. And of course you were there and I was not. I had intended to be there. In fact, I had sent animals with very little labeling because I was like, I'm going to be there to take care of it. And I know what I'm looking at. And then I all of a sudden find myself unable to be there. And so I'm doing okay. But how about yourself, Roy? How's things on your end?
Oh, things are pretty good. Yeah, as you know, I got right back from Pomona and immediately dove into work. I was just gone for 2 days following the 4 days that I was away for Pomona. I was gone working and doing stewardship work, making burn piles, splitting wood, doing chainsaw work, which is fun. I love doing that, but it's also kind of a crazy thing to leave right on the heels of being gone for that long, leaving our little wolf all the reptiles behind. But everybody's doing well. Today I spent the whole day kind of catching up with the herps and taking care of everybody, feeding babies, and everybody's doing great. So I feel really grateful to Catherine for making sure the misting reservoir is full and all the water bowls are full. So shout out to Katarina for keeping things on the rails there.
Yeah, let's go.
And yeah, man, it was obviously super sad not to have you at Pomona.
I know.
It was a good experience. It was pretty funny, y'all. Phil called me. So Phil sent his Euros to our mutual friend Chris on Wednesday. And then Thursday at 6 a.m., I got a call from Phil and sounding like absolute death and with a fever of 104 degrees. And I was like, oh, no.
It was 103 at first.
Okay. It was bad, people.
Which is still not good, you know? It was like it bounced pretty consistently between like 102 and then occasionally hitting 104. It did not want to respond to Tylenol or to like nothing that like the things we typically think of as like fever reducers and things that help you feel better. Just did not want to make a dent. You know, the first couple of nights trying to sleep with that flu was like horrific, you know, because, you know, it was one of those things where you're like, you're congested and coughing. So you can't really lay on your back. Right. Cause then you'll just cough. Your whole body is aching. So you can't really, you can't find a comfortable place to sit still cause your whole body's pissed. And then you're so feverish that every single time you move, it makes, you know, that feeling like when you move your skin across sheets where, and you're sick, where like it hurts, it feels like it hurts. The friction from the sheets on your skin feels like painful and it causes you to shiver just because you're like, oh, so cold and so damn feverish. And so I did not sleep at all really for the first couple of nights. And,
that's awful,
I mean,
man.
It was horrific. It was so bad. And I mean, you know, for folks out there who don't fully understand this part of it, like on my end anyway, like I had this terrible, terrible, terrible feeling because like, you know, we had Roy and I had rallied resources for the show. We'd paid for our flights with, you know, Roy had gone through the trouble of getting a bunch of stickers made and shirts and pint glasses and mugs and all these things like set to go for the show. And I had sent my Euros out there. Roy drove 8 hours, by the way, like all the way up, south, right? So he went south. So he drove 8 hours from where he's living to get down there. And I had a friend of mine, Josh Marquis, who, upon hearing that I was going to go, decided to go out to the Pomona show. And I had more than one person who on like Instagram and on the socials had heard that I was going to be there and then went as a result. Like they wanted to go and they, you know, because they wanted to meet us and everything. And it, and then I couldn't go. And like, you know, the thing of it was, if it had been any other kind of illness where it was like, oh, I just have the sniffles, or like I have a light cough, I'm just feeling a little crummy, but it's like it's just a regular cold, I would have toughed it out. Like I would have just gone. But by the time that Friday rolled around, I was so, like I remember having this moment of such gratitude that I did not push through and try to get out to the show, because there's no way I would have reasonably been it would have been horrible. Like I just would have gotten Roy and Chris sick. And you know, Chris has two little infant boys at home, and I didn't want to like transmit anything their way, for, you know, just by being around those guys. And I mean, it was just so goddamn bad. And then, you know, so then Friday, or maybe it was Saturday morning, you know, Roy and Chris, obviously being the champs that they are, were just like, hey, like, it's cool, man. Like, we'll help you out. We'll hawk your Euros and whatever. And so they like call me Saturday morning and they're like, okay, like, hey, here are all the Euros you sent. Here's like the labels. These two didn't have labels on them. And this one, the label fell off. And so I had to like get them to show me the animals individually and like, let me get an eye on them, because I can like tell which ones they were. And I'll be like, okay, mm-hmm. those two are siblings. And that one can share labels with that one. And then this. Or not. I mean, it was just, God damn it. It was, and they, it was such an ordeal, man. It was obnoxious. It was just obnoxious. And I hate the feeling that someone is picking up my slack, especially because of something out of my control. Like it's just extra horrendous for my money. I don't know.
Well, man, you can't help being sick, and you know, it all worked out pretty dang well. I think it was actually good in some ways for me, because you know, my plan for Pomona was just like, okay, I'm going to hide behind Phil the whole weekend, and I don't have to do the talking. Everyone's going to want to see Phil. I can just kind of linger back here and just be some rando. And then I couldn't do that. I had to be out there and talking to people. And, you know, it was great. It was a good experience. It was definitely like just crazy overstimulating and like just such a wild thing. I've never been to a show that big or like that, like packed. Like it was like the aisles, you know, at peak hours, like you couldn't walk through them. It was just like a solid sea of people, which I've never been to a show like that before. So that was cool to see, just like as a spectacle, you know. And you know, of course, did get to see some folks from the podcast, you know, who came by and said hello, which was really cool to have folks come by and say, oh wow, you know, I listened to your show. And everyone was really nice and really complimentary about the show, which is always nice to hear, of course. And
Can I show you this is what I make, this is what I think of when I think of you getting ready to like get ready for the introverts preparing to say here during roll call, during attendance.
Yeah, that's just me. That's basically me.
Yeah. And I just see you just being like, you know, it like, was, oh no, I gotta talk.
Here we go, you know, brace myself. Nah, you know, I felt pretty cheerful about it all, honestly. Like I was a little bit like, I was a little bit panicked at first. I was like, oh man, this is going to be crazy. But it all worked out. Yeah. It was great. And, you know, it was really sweet to see some like just people that I really admire within the herpetoculture world. You know, Philippe was there, of course. It was good to see Philippe.
Yeah.
And, you know, good to see a lot of friends from the show, people we've had on the show, like Armin and Jay and, just a whole bunch of folks. I mean, too many to name, including some folks that like, you know, I've known from social media for like 5 or 6 years, but have never actually met, you know, face to face, got to meet them, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, I actually brought my big male, sulfurious handsome boy to the show. And,
yeah,
which I was a little bit like, okay, do I want to bring this snake to the show? It's a little bit scary for me to bring like this very beloved animal. I don't want to stress him out. You know, he's 16 years old. I don't know. You know, there's a lot that was going through my mind about it, but that turned out to be like such a highlight because he just did great. Like he was super relaxed at the show. Like there were multiple times where like, you know, I would have him out and he would be kind of wrapped around me and just kind of hanging out for like an hour at a time, you know, and he was just chilling, like not puffing up at all, not getting stressed, just like slowly flicking his tongue. Just checking everything out. Just like, whoa, what is this? You know, I think that for him, it was probably like a bit of a psychedelic experience with all the stimuli, you know, that was coming his way. Yeah. But he did great. And it was really cool too, because some of the people at that show had actually met him before because he's been to the Reptile Super Show back before I had him again, you know, when it was his prior steward. And so some of those folks like recognized him and saw him again, got to see him again. And that was really cool to see. And I think only two people correctly ID'd what species of snake he is. Cause he's just such a giant.
Dude, and I can imagine it too. I imagine somebody walking through and being like, whoa,
usually it was, oh my God, is that a Kribo? And which is, you know, understandable because like, yeah, it's a giant colubrid, you know, Kribo makes sense. And I'm like, it's actually, I think I said the word, he's actually an Amazon puffing snake probably 600 times over the course of the 2 days.
Yeah, sure. I just love the idea that someone came up and was just like calling him by his Latin and be like, is that a sulfurous bolote? And just like the nerdiest humans imaginable. Like,
yes.
Like I gotta admit, I was very excited to go. I was so excited to go hang out with you and hang out with Chris. And then very importantly, I really wanted to hang out with I wanted to meet everybody, you know, I have like this bizarre experience of herpetoculture where it's like, it would have been weird. It just would have been weird enough if I got to kind of where I am in my career and had not met anybody really in person, you know, mm-hmm. just literally haven't, you know, like I went to Iguana Fest one time, you know what I mean? And like, I got to go to that and I got to meet some super cool people there and it was great fun. But that was it. And then since then, I haven't been to a single show or a single symposium. And then like, you know, we were both set up to speak at the second Herpeton, which then fell through, mm-hmm. right? And so then because of COVID. And so then it's like, well, I didn't get to go meet everybody then. And that just, that just sort of disappeared and kind of made me feel weird, right? Mm-hmm. But to add on top of that we do this show, and it's like, I've gotten, you know, cause technically I've obviously met a lot of people now. Like I've technically met Philippe and Ron and Eric and, mm-hmm. you know, literally everybody, but I've never met only like two or three of those people that have been on the show I've ever met in person.
Right.
That's just, you know, and it's like, it's such a bizarre phenomenon. It's like, to have what I feel like is an extended network of sort of acquaintances and surface level friends and whatnot and sort of career cronies and all that nonsense. But it's so weird to have not met these people in the damn flesh. And it's just, God, it's infuriating. Like I really can't wait till the opportunity finally presents itself to me to be able to like sit and have a beer with some of those guys and just shoot the shit and be like, hey, check out, mm-hmm. hey Armin, look at those gnolls. How about that? You know, like look at all those things, you know? Mm-hmm. And Anolis, sick, you know, like, yeah,
it's coming.
And I know it's coming. I know. And I'm sure we'll be at Tinley for mm-hmm. various reasons, which, you know, we technically could talk about at some point, but mm-hmm. maybe we'll just hold off on that. But you know, it seems like such a unique phenomenon, right? Because everyone, like, it's just a whole nother thing when you get to meet people face to face, shake their hand, see the animals that they brought with them to the show, talk about them, be like, hey, what's up with that thing? What's with that stupid, mm-hmm. what's with this giant Kreebo that you have, Roy? What is this, mm-hmm. you know? mm-hmm. So I don't know. It was but you got to endure the whole slog of it all. So, you know, tell me more about it. Tell me more about what you felt and sort of what the experience was like for you.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like I didn't really experience the show very much at all. Mm-hmm. You know, like my experience of like walking through and seeing other tables and other vendors and stuff was literally like the circuit between me and like the bathroom, you know, because literally like we would get there and like after setup, you know, and I never sat down for the full 2 days. I was just standing there, you know, talking to people at the booth and, which was awesome. Like, and I didn't really expect to do a lot of walking around. I think that if you were there, we probably,
it would have been easier.
We would have had to, you know, but, it was fine to just focus on that. And, you know, like, I'm really thankful to like Chris and Jose and Kayla and everybody at the booth who was helping out, you know, with coverage and cause we were sharing it with Chris of Sharpshooter Reptiles and kind of his crew and Kayla from Infrared Reptiles was there the whole time too. And just kind of, that was nice to be able to be like, hey y'all, can y'all just keep an eye on things so I can go just take a walk real quick. And, but I was just like pretty blown away by the scale of the show. And, you know, there's definitely like this sense that like, okay, this is like a heavily promoted show. And part of that is that like it's the Reptile Super Show, and so it's a spectacle, you know, as much as it is like a marketplace, it's like a spectacle for people. And so like 50% of the people that are there are not reptile people really at all. They're like people that are like, all right, kids, you want to go have a crazy experience this weekend? Yeah, you know, which was also really cool because, you know, there were like all these, you know, like little kids who were like, whoa, what's this giant snake that you're holding? And you're like, can I pet it? You know? And like, you know, they have no idea that they're, you know, that they're what this animal is, you know, or how weird it is or anything. But it's cool to get to talk to them about that kind of thing. And, and it was also really cool to connect with like other people who are into like, you know, the more hardcore stuff and who did recognize that snake, you know, and like recognized your Euros and were like, oh, these are captive bred. Like, that's awesome. You know? And like, these are,
captive
look
bred
how
hot.
Beautiful they look, you know? And,
yeah.
So that was really cool. And there were some folks who came by that like already had Euros from you who were like there to get their second Euro, you know?
Crazy.
That was so cool to like talk to some folks. There was there's one fellow, I think his name was Justin. I hope I'm getting that correct, but
he ended up
picking up one of your Euros and, he'd already had one. So he picked up another and he was also showing me like, you know, photos on his phone of this like incredible outdoor enclosure that he had made for his Cyclura in his backyard. That was just like so awesome. And
that's cool.
So that's like always, it's always so cool to connect with folks like that who are just like really passionate and who like really care about their animals and are just like trying to do the absolute best they can. And, you know, I always just like have a ton of respect and appreciation for that. And, I was able to find homes for two of the neonate sulfurius I brought, which felt great. And I feel like they've really ended up with like in really good hands, which is really, I mean, that's the priority, you know. It's like, especially with selling, you know, herps at shows, I feel like in some ways, the rarity of the species that I'm working with for the most part is like a bit of a safeguard from this, but it's always a little bit like, gosh, I want to be confident that with the animals I'm, you know, selling or ending up in a good place. And sometimes at a show, it can feel like hard to gauge that. But, Yeah, I felt really good about the people that they went home with. They were really experienced keepers who had worked with other, you know, big collier breeds and other stuff in like the kind of puffing snake complex. So
sure.
That felt really good. And, yeah, man, I mean, it was also fun too, like the after the show experience, like, you know, going out to eat and just like hanging out.
Yeah.
We went to this place, this restaurant called Tropical Mexico. And it was just like this table of 20 people. We just like got a bunch of tables and put them all together. And, you know, a bunch of like very intergenerational group of people. And that was really cool. And, you know, Nick Vine, who you mm-hmm. know, you and I both know was there, and he came out to dinner with mm-hmm. us too. And
great.
It was just like, it was just really sweet. So I'm definitely like,
yeah.
Okay, that was a great like first go at this. And definitely like affirms this kind of longing that I've felt about really wanting more like surface area with folks this year, like in mm-hmm. person, you know, and like more community mm-hmm. aspect of herpetoculture and trying to like make it more tangible and less online. So that felt really good to experience. And
it also even though I didn't go because I was dying, I pretty much felt that the way you described the experience made me pretty confident that if I was to go like next time, the next either Super Show or a Tinley or whatever, I don't think I'd bring anything. I think I would just go mm-hmm. and walk around and meet people and talk mm-hmm. to people. I don't think mm-hmm. I'm not sure I would want to vend mm-hmm. again for a while, just because it, you know, you said it yourself. You said you were so caught up with talking to people who were coming to our booth, to your booth mm-hmm. and to who were talking to you and wanting to pick your brain and whatnot. And as great as that is, and as fun as that sounds, it's just like, ooh, man, I don't think I could be stopped from going to walk around. I would just so naturally just go walk around and go look. I'd be like, I'm going to go look. I'm just, that's kind of the person I am anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I can't imagine. I think next time, maybe if we do end up at Tinley, I think that seems like that should probably be the move. Maybe no vending. And actually, I'm not even sure what I've got anymore, man. I've got such a small number of ornates available now. It's just like, it's really dwindled a lot more quickly than I anticipated.
Yeah, I like the idea of maybe like, of not really focusing on vending, but maybe doing like pre-orders. You know, if people want to like pre-order, you know, an animal or something, then like bring it, which is like, I think that's also just a cool thing to do in general too. It helps like, again, disrupt that whole like, you know, vetting process that can be kind of complicated at a show. I know that Summer from the shop does that with their animals, and I think that's a cool way to go. Mm-hmm. I just see this message from, I think it's Paul. Hey, Paul, I'm pretty sure that's you. That's interesting. I didn't see that about the unsold animals being dropped off at the local rescue, but yeah, I mean, of the small amount of the show that I saw, like, I think I probably saw only like 25% of the tables, something like that. And even then it was just like walking by and kind of like quickly doing a cursory glance over things. Of course, like super ball python heavy. I mean, I think that's my experience of all of the shows I've been to since returning to herpetoculture in 2018 is that it's like, you know, a more than 50% of the show is made up of ball pythons, crested geckos, you know, like probably just honestly, those two species are honestly a lot of times 50% of a show. And then, you know, another strong percentage is going to be like beardies and leopard geckos. And then kind of everything after that is like really in small numbers. So I didn't see the part about, again, like them dropping out sold animals at the rescue. That's kind of a dark thing. There was definitely like a lot of like running around at the end of the show, you know, folks being like, are you guys buying, you know, and yeah, people trying to move along animals that they clearly didn't want to be going home with them. But, I think that's probably inevitable at most shows like that.
Yeah. I'm sort of curious about that whole realm of herpetoculture. Cause like, you know, for example, it does seem to be that like, in some ways, ball pythons have turned into sort of like the koi of our world, right? Like the ball pythons are like the koi equivalent of the freshwater fish market in some way. Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't be at all surprised, you know, like you go to a pond show, right? Where it's all about pond stuff. And while it might not be exclusively koi, it's like, it's probably gonna be mostly koi, mm-hmm. you know? And I kind of wonder, like, what is there? Do you see the same things in those places? And if not, like, why? You know, because it's like, I like ball pythons, and I think if they're going to be what they are, then I just really wonder about, like, what causes that, you know, like, why people treat them in that way. And do we see that in other sort of like parallel type markets and sort of what the differences are, you know, like why is it? Cause in some way koi, it's almost gotta be worse. Cause koi, like those things breed by the thousand, you know, I mean, those things spawn in crazy numbers. My mom has them spawn in her pond, you know, every year, you know? And it's like, if overpopulation, market saturations are problems, then it's like, you'd imagine you'd see it there too. But I wonder if there's just a different ethic. I wonder if there's just a totally different conception of like what's going on in that world. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally know what you're saying. I wish I had insight into it. I feel like we should try and we should talk to somebody who's like more in that world, find somebody who can offer some insight from that side of, you know, of the fence, so to speak. Cause, I don't know. I mean, it definitely does seem as though there's this point where we're at with just like market saturation, you know, and just like a true abundance of animals. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's like, it gets super complicated when we're talking about living creatures, you know, and, I've definitely been seeing more and more conversation about that happening in online spaces. And, I feel like honestly, it's one of those realms that I want to educate myself better about, because again, it feels like I've spoken to this in the past, but that like, I feel like I occupy this like niche within a niche, you know, in herpetoculture where it's like, I have like basically no interface with that side of herpetoculture. And that was actually kind of one of the interesting things about going to this show is that like, you know, and also having this podcast that we have is that, it's exposing me to like a much broader, image of what herpetoculture is, you know? And, I think that like, I try to maintain some kind of awareness about that it is this much larger project than just the thing that I'm seeing, the thing that I'm practicing. Cause it's definitely a much broader thing than that. But anyway,
it's strange, you know? I mean, especially like, it also wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to me, you know, that some breeders would take unsold animals and drop them at a table for a rescue. It's like, what? You know, you wouldn't do that with, I mean, again, if we're going to talk about the way people sort of commoditize the animals, you wouldn't do that with just straight up product. Like, why would, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, it is so... so bizarre to me. Yeah, Matt, there are koi goldfish hybrids. Yes, that is in fact true. Yeah, I've seen them. They're super neat. I mean, a koi is basically a carp, you know, which is basically, that's what a goldfish is a carp. Mm-hmm. A carp, Matt. I know, Matt. We're friends, so I'm just giving a lot of time. But like, yeah, I love carp, actually. And Magikarp was one of my favorite Pokemon because he evolved into Gyarados. And that's my jam.
Yeah. Here we go.
I was so into that. Yeah,
I was just now waiting really for us to get talk about Pokemon. Yeah, here we go.
Oh, really? Okay, what was your favorite Pokemon?
Oh, man, I don't know. I feel on the spot.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah.
How dare you? But anyhow, no, it's okay. But it's like, but really, there is something, there's something in that that kind of, you know, perplexes me a lot. Like, why, you know, it's like, yeah, sure, we can go ahead and table the things that seem obvious to us, which is that, well, of course, these are living creatures. You should treat them with some sort of dignity and respect, which is like, yeah, me too, kiddies. I'm technically still into Pokemon. I still collect cards. Don't hate on me here. But hey, kitty, come here.
I gifted all my I think I had like the original 150. I think I had all the cards and I gifted them to a really passionate kiddo at one point, I remember.
Yeah.
But I can't say that I'm still up to date. Or how many Pokemon are there now?
too many.
A lot more
there
than
should 150. Have only been way more than 151, and unfortunately, which is a drag because you know they really started scraping from the bottom of the creativity barrel when they started. Oh my God, dude, it's so bad. But I it's like one of the things that I loved about Pokemon, or actually, I feel like, okay, this is actually kind of fair because, yeah, please do. Yeah, I'd appreciate that actually. But the reality is like one of the things I loved about Pokemon back in the day was that it felt like, it felt like reptile breeding in some regard. It was like not the gotta catch them all mentality, but just like these were like fabled creatures. These were like creatures that you kind of engaged with on a pet. Yeah, it's great biodiversity. That's true, Matt. Yeah, but like it engaged with this like level of desire to keep something that was like a real living creature that was like a companion of yours. You know what I mean? And what I liked about a lot of the original Pokemon is they seemed like real things. Like they were like a real, mm-hmm. you know, not obviously not that real, but like, you know, real enough.
It was like this iterative thing, you know, going off of creatures that actually had like specific niches, right? And it was like trying to be like, okay, this Pokemon inhabits this niche. And, you know, you are getting some principles of like, you know, of biology, I guess, from it. I definitely felt like, you know, when I used to play the little Game Boy Pokemon games, you know, Pokemon
hell yeah
yellow or
yeah red and yellow baby
yeah
Let's
red
go.
And yellow the originals and
blue
right and
get
that
it felt it
like
right,
that in some ways it felt like herping in the sense that like you're cruising around and you're like looking for critters. You know,
total,
and like,
dude, total,
especially
yes.
when it was like wintertime, you know, when I was living in Utah as like a 10-year-old and I couldn't go outside and look for critters because it was snowing, but I could do it on my Game Boy. At least there was that.
Yeah. And you had to go to the right places to find certain things. There were some that were more rare, some that were less, that were very, very common. You had to teach them stuff to do. Some of them you had to expose them to random stones to get them to evolve and all the stupid. It was like, this is sick. This is like the weirdest mythology. It's so interesting. And mm-hmm. it really did have a lot of resemblance to herpetoculture. And I feel like we've really slid down the de-evolution train here. And dude, this we're talking about Pokemon now. Like, what are we doing?
We got to get back on the back on the rails here.
No. Well, if unfortunately what we're going to do now is we're going to end up talking about Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super, because that's where this leads me, you know, like the leveling up, and you know.
Then it'll have to be a monologue because I can't follow you there. I didn't unfortunately experience those worlds. I know.
That's highly disappointing.
Well, you should pity me because it's a sign of my deprivation, you know.
You know, the true
cultural poverty
for sure,
that I lived in.
Yeah, no, that does sound like cultural poverty. Yeah, like it's a real bummer.
My God, the chat. This is like what we needed to get the chat bump in here.
apparently, we had to talk to everybody about Lapras apparently Pikachu ramen over here. Pika ramen over here. That's great. That's incredible stuff. But anyway, God damn it. This really got me. This is hysterically funny. So something that I was kind of trying to, I was going to gear towards with regard mm-hmm. to like the show and kind of that weird like disposability factor and like kind of why that doesn't make much sense to me. It's like, you know, I get that space is at a premium. I get it, right? Like I'm pretty much always at capacity in terms of space, but it's like, if you have animals that can't be moved, just set up another damn cage, dude. Just set up another cage, like it, and stop breeding until, you know, don't breed anything else until you sell something more, you know, like it just, yeah, exactly. You shouldn't breed anything you can't absorb. And it's like, you know, and I've even had to go so far as to like, you know, get super, super low tech about it, but, you know, by like setting, you know, propping up 4 or 5 hubs, you know, like Sterilite tubs and hang lights over the top of them. I mean, that's technically what a lot of my setups are anyway, but like, you know, really just set them up for 6 months. It's not gonna hurt them. If anything, it's gonna be better. It's gonna be way better for them to do that than to drop them off at a table for a rescue. You know, I don't understand. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know where that kind of desire to just, you know, to just get on to the next thing, to like get stuff out and have it not mean anything. And, you know, like the man, actually, this brings me to something else. I have to make sure I say this in a diplomatic fashion because, I don't want it to come across, in any kind of way, and it could get kind of specific. So I went to a local shop and, you know, I'm really lucky that there are some great shops here in Colorado. There are some, maybe not so great, but there are some great shops here that have some good people, some with some solid ethic and good space and good cleanliness, and they do good work. I mean, the whole kit and caboodle, right? But like, I went into this shop and was kind of horrified by everything that I saw. Not the animals, right? Like the animals seemed okay. It was more like the crowd. You know, there was a lady who had 2 kids with her walking around, and these kids were just like just losing the, I mean, they were like 7, 8 years old and were like knocking shit off the shelves and like pushing each other into the shelves. And this lady like only looked up from her phone to see what these 2 kids were up to just for a second to say, are you serious right now? And then just keep walking and ignoring her kids. And then there was another person who was there at the shop who was like just being so loud and so obnoxious and like in a way that's really, really difficult to describe, it, you know, like to the point where, you know, you really wanted to almost say like, dude, you need to just quiet down. Like you're being so disruptive to everyone in here. Like what is going on with you? Like, why are you doing this? Like, you definitely can tell what your volume is right now. Just bring it down. You're not the only person in the room, you know? But it was even weirder because this person, I swear to God, they were trying to get me to talk to them, but kind of in a weird peripheral way because he was like saying, oh yeah, I really want to get me some of those sandfish, you know, those sandfish skinks, sandfish. And then I was like, huh, that's kind of weird. I have those. And then he was like, yeah, but I also thought I might get some uromastics, you know, those real nice ones, those ornate uromastics. And I was like, this is weird. I have those too. Huh. And then he's like, yeah, but, and I also thought I might get me some of those shield tailed agamas, but $400, that's just too much for a dinky little lizard. You know, those shield tailed agamas. And he was talking to the guy behind the counter. And I was just like, this dude's fucking trolling me. This dude's trolling me for sure. like he has to be, it was just such a, and the reason I say this, the reason I'm pointing this out is because like, I was talking with, I think I was talking with my, you know, with Rach, my wife, about this. It's like, dude, you know, I was talking with Josh about it. That's who I was talking with this about. And it reminded me of our conversation with him, with Josh Marquis, about like the more we value our stuff, the more that is going to set an example for the kinds of people that we bring into herpetoculture. You know, like I don't want people like, I mean, look, I, you know, whatever, I can't pick and choose who can be involved in herpetoculture, but like, I want people who are going to be ethical and try to make good choices and try to be good to each other and try to be good to the animals and try to, you know what I mean? Try to do like some of the right stuff in herpetoculture. Like, it matters. If you have people who have never kept a reptile pet before and they go in with their family into that reptile shop that day and they see those people in the shop, like these are the kinds of people who keep reptiles. Like, I'm not having my kid keep reptiles. I'm not keeping reptiles if this is the way people are going to be. Like, that's a shitty way to kind of engage. It's just made really like bummed me out, man. It was like a real, it kind of irritated me. It made me feel like a little bit disappointed, you know, in the cohort. And I know that probably makes me sound super judgmental and like a little bit, you know, cocky and like, fine, whatever. I say it in an effort to try to like ask people to set a better example for what we're doing here. You know what I mean? Like just try to just be a little bit better, you know, especially, and like at a show. If you're like a breeder who's going to drop off the stuff you didn't sell at a rescue, bro, people are watching. There are people there with cameras. Like, people know what you're doing. Like, think it through. Just think it through, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a complicated thing because, like, I don't know. I think that, like, how do I talk about this?
I don't know. How do you talk about this?
I think that people tend to assume that like I'm kind of a pretentious ass just because of like the way that I keep my herps, because I'm super particular, and but that's like what I'm not doing that for anybody but myself. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, it's that's what is interesting about it for me, and that's what like gets me stoked about it. And I try not to like get on my high horse with other people, and all that stuff. But I do feel like also like I try to think about, okay, like, I'm an ambassador for herpetoculture, you know, like, I'm not saying I'm an influencer or like anything, but like just as a participant, like if every participant is considering that they're an ambassador for this trade, this discipline, this art that we're all involved in, you know, I think it's important to consider that, you know, to consider those kinds of things. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, like I always think about like our conversation that we had with Heather Moy, you know, from Fairy Tale, and just like how it's like she's just going like above and beyond. And it's like, well, because like, that's the herpetoculture that she wants to participate in. You know, and like, if it doesn't already exist, like, you have to be part of creating it, right? And I feel like we're all, there's a lot of us who are approaching herpetoculture in that way. But as with anything, there are also people who never consider that, you know, like, whether, you know, for a number of reasons. And I don't want to like necessarily demonize those people, because some of those reasons are valid, but
no, demonize them. Demon slayer.
But it's good to it's good to interact with people who really care, you know, and like who are trying to do things different and trying to like elevate things, and who are just like, I guess, like, who are taking a proactive stance. Because that's the other thing too, is like, I try not to get too sucked into just like the infighting and like name calling and drama and all that stuff. Like, it's just not for me. I'm not so good at that, but thankfully there's a lot of people that aren't necessarily going that way.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I had the sort of weird experience of kind of being for a long time. I would kind of go in and out of herpetoculture for a while, you know. So between like high school and I don't know. There was a time span somewhere between like 17, 18, and I don't know, maybe 21, 22, 23, somewhere in that range, where like I kind of spent some time away from herpetoculture for a little while. And, you know, I remember one of the reasons, I mean, most of the reasons were because I was in college and, you know, I was moving a lot and things weren't really stable. I couldn't really support a reptile at the time. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I came back, I remember being like pretty firmly psyched to have been like missing some of that, you know, like it felt great to not be working at a reptile shop where people were like really obsessed with those sorts of things. And like, that being said, I also remember when I worked at a reptile shop, I remember being really, really frustrated very regularly, you mm-hmm. know, because, you know, whether it was because of the number of animals that you'd see brought in by people who were like, I don't know what's going on with them. What do I do? And it's like, man, you brought it here? Did you think to take it to a vet 6 months ago? Mm-hmm. Did you think about reading a book 6 months ago? Because right now, this animal's just fucked, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. like, and it was really challenging. I always found it very challenging to deal with, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to call it, you know, just like that kind of stuff that really, it happens, you know, mm-hmm. like it just happens. And, you know, I feel a pretty regular push pull between most of the time, just not giving a damn about that kind of stuff, you know, just like not focusing on it, not paying attention to it, you know, like I'm not going to let these kinds of interactions or the kinds of things that happen like that kind of get me down. It's not worth focusing on. It's not worth paying attention to. And I also feel like, you know, I also feel this other side of me, which says that example matters and accountability matters. Mm-hmm. And so I have a really, really hard time balancing those two realities, you know, you know, I wouldn't turn a blind eye if it was someone, you know, like not feeding their kid or their horse or their dog or something, you know, you wouldn't turn a blind eye to it, but like, you know, but somehow I'm supposed to have extra sympathy for someone because, well, it's like a reptile. What do you expect from them? And it's, oh, it's a reptile. What do you expect? People don't know what they are. Oh, it's a reptile. They're so different from you. They're so different from mammals. Like, you know, what do you expect? There's mm-hmm. like this bizarre level of culturally instantiated acceptance of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's complicated, you know? It's like, it's a tricky subject. I'm going to turn the light on here in my room to get
go
some,
for it. Yeah.
Some light here, but keep going.
Yeah, man. Yeah, what Kitty's just said about just like neglect being the most common form of animal abuse, it's like very real. And I think that it's like especially can be pronounced with reptiles because they're often like sometimes it's kind of part of the pitch that some people have given for reptiles over the years is like, oh, this is an animal that can like thrive on neglect. Like I've literally heard people, you know, say that. And it's like, well, it's important to qualify statements like that a little bit. Cause some people don't really get that. That's not a relative thing they just think that that's true, but
yeah,
maybe that's giving people too much credit.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's kind of what we deal with in this world. It's like this really bizarre world of like, conflicting interests, conflicting drives, conflicting imperatives, you know, because mm-hmm. like, you know, there is an imperative on some level to just ignore some of that shit, you know, like, because obviously, you know, I'm not talking about like ignoring abuse necessarily, but like, you know, ignoring the fact that some people don't behave the way you want them to and ignoring the fact that like, we're all different. Not everybody's the same. It's not the kind of thing where, you know, you can expect you can have the same expectations of everyone. Of course, not everyone is capable of all the same things, and that's okay too, you know, like mm-hmm. it takes a village and that's normal. And also, there are some instances in which, like, it's we probably should say more. You know, people should be like, excuse me, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Sir,
mm-hmm.
No, you know, it's weird that those two things kind of fight each other a lot, mm-hmm. You know, and I also feel like it can get complicated because, you know, we don't want to get sucked into some of the drama, right? Like, we've all dealt with individuals who, like, really seem like they can just do nothing but get involved with some of the most stupid and meaningless gripes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just sort of like, dude, that has nothing to do with you. Can you just let it go? Like, can we just have mm-hmm. dinner, you know, like, and not have you talking to me about this thing going on,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, or whatever, like, whatever it may be. Right. We've all encountered people like that too. Who can't check into now, you know, sort of at the expense of something else that they're so concerned about. Because it's not happening. It's not right here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I feel, actually, man, I was listening to this great podcast today. Do you know Rick Rubin, like the producer Rick Rubin?
He's like, yeah, of course.
So, yeah, okay.
Legendary.
Everybody knows that guy, right? So
yeah,
so he's got this great podcast that he does called Tetragrammaton, and he's got a bunch of interesting people on there, like a bunch of actors and some of them, a lot of musicians and some random, just a bunch of random people, like, you know. He had like Mark Andreessen on there, and he had a Robert Greene and stuff. But one in particular, he had on Jack Johnson. You know Jack Johnson, right? Like the the musician, right? Not the not the boxer, but the musician, right?
I figured not the boxer. He's been dead for a long time, but
he's been dead.
That would have been cool, though.
Would have been really cool if he'd had actually had Jack Johnson, the heavyweight boxer, on there. That'd have been so sick, dude. Oh my god. Oh my god, I'd lose my mind. I would
that would actually be incredible.
dude,
Jack Johnson was an endlessly interesting man.
I know. Have you heard that weird myth about him? Like, well, I don't know if it's a myth, I don't know if it's true, but about how he said about how he was speeding through a town somewhere, he gets pulled over and the cop tells him, he's like, oh, there's a $50 fine for speeding, and he gives him $100, and he's like, I'm gonna be doing the same thing when I come back, when I leave later. He's
that sounds like Jack Johnson to me.
Boy, I hope it's true. I hope it's true.
I hope so too.
I hope it's true. But anyway, I've been a fan of Jack Johnson's music for a long time. Like, I've been listening to him since I was in high school, and you know, and I remember kind of getting picked on for liking his music, even though he's one of the most popular musicians on earth. Shut the hell up.
Yeah.
You know, but that whole scene, right? Like him, Ben Harper, G Love and Special Sauce. Like, I loved all that stuff in high school. I mean, I still love it today, but, Jack Johnson in particular. And he was talking about how him and his wife have set up like this, charity on their, somewhere in Hawaii. Some kind of charity thing where they like where kids can take field trips to this farm that they set up, and on the farm they've kicked out invasive plant species and invasive animal species, and intentionally planted native plant species, which encourages all the native animal species to kind of come back, and you know, they do like organic stuff, and you know, which is like a lot of farming education and whatnot, and he said something on that which I feel like relates to this particular part of the conversation, which was like, he was saying like, you have to make the things that people care about, like, local to them. Like, it's gotta be in your backyard, you know, like, if it matters, if it's in your backyard and it matters in your backyard and you care about it, you'll protect it. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, damn, Jack Johnson, you're just coming out here with some heat, you know, like, just coming. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was really cool. I feel like I'd heard that before, that sentiment, but it really just stood out today in a way that I felt was like a little bit different, you know? It was really cool. I really liked it.
I think that's really real. I mean, that's in a lot of ways too. It's like, it's the absence of that that allows like a lot of like the evils of the world to happen, you know, like, you know, the externalities. It's like, you know, if it's happening, you know, if the consequences of us having like these, you know, these phones, like we've talked about, you know, is like, we're not seeing the, you know, the the enslaved labor and essentially and all of that stuff happening a world away, we don't have to think about that, right? But it's like, we'd probably feel differently about these things if we lived right next to it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, probably. Right. Yeah, man. Well, damn it. This is depressing.
I know. Let's go somewhere else with this conversation. It's got a little dark. This is what happens when we go live.
Right, for sure. Yes. Yeah, we go live. We start talking about Pokemon, Jack Johnson, and cobalt mining, and things get a little heavy. Oh my God. Oh Christ.
Well, I'm curious. Is anyone in the chat? Is there anything out there that y'all want us to talk on, or any questions y'all have, or anything like that? Just since we're doing this thing. Not Matt. Sorry, Matt.
Although
I do agree. Banana pancakes are delicious. I know a lot of Matts. I don't know if I know this particular Matt or not.
You know Matt? This is Matt. This is Matt Dahlke. He's local here to me, and he's a buddy of mine. And he started out coming to help me. He like lent me some books just randomly. That was super nice of him. And then we kind of developed a bit of a friendship there. And he like would come to the shop every once in a while and help me out there and stuff. And I would just yell at him the whole time. So that's that, man. So we can. Nice. He's not allowed to ask questions at all. Yeah, he's barred from
anyone else.
Yeah, I'd love it if anybody. It would actually be really interesting if anybody has any questions or anything they'd like to ask us or hear us shoot the shit about, because it might, or you know, if it's good, better be good. It can only be good.
And there's no pressure, people. But since we're here.
There's pressure, Roy. Come on. All right, fine. I guess nobody's gonna ask any damn questions. How rude is
that?
That's
okay. That's okay. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about some stuff that we're working on that's upcoming. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Can we do that? I don't know. We don't really have.
Yeah, we signed contracts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we can talk about it. I mean, like which ones? Which ones are we talking about here?
We got so many things. Wait. What months are breeding season bearded dragon?
Any month.
Yeah.
Any
pretty
month.
Much.
Those things will breed all year round. They'll breed in either. You got a mature pair and you put them through a cooling cycle. They'll breed any time of year, those bearded dragons. They're awesome. Gotta love those things.
Wonderful, I do remember you, my
animals. No, you don't.
Was it for a Hog Island boa or like a K Island boa? Maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Man, I love Hog Island boas. Those things are so cool. I'm serious. I love Hog Island boas. I think they're bad to the bone. Wait, which upcoming things are we talking about here? Are we talking about the
There's a few things. One is not officially confirmed yet. We have some meetings scheduled to do confirmation about this. But for those who have been asking about a herpeton style thing hosted by myself and Phil, we do have something along those lines in the works for... I guess it would be Q3 this year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's something coming up that way. And we also have some exciting things in the works with Happy Dragons, where essentially, so in addition to our webinars, we're also going to be working on offering some essentially course work coming up. And Phil and I have been deep in design process conversation around like what would be our like ideal way to approach herpetoculture from like a teaching perspective. Like how would we want to do it? What do we think are like the fundamentals that people should know if they're going into herpetoculture? And so we're essentially designing a series about that we will be presenting with our friends at Happy Dragons later this year, and we're very excited about it. So that's another thing that's coming up. And yeah, the other thing, I mean, Phil already alluded to it, but it's looking highly likely, if not all but confirmed, that we will be at Tinley in October this year. For all of our good friends on the in the Midwest circuit, kind of on the East Coast, everybody that goes out to Tinley every year that I never get to go see, hopefully we'll finally get
the
to
Middle Coast.
There. Yeah.
Yes, hopefully I don't get sick this time. God.
You're not allowed. Not allowed to get sick.
No, I can't, man. I wasn't allowed to get sick this time. And I got sick this time.
Maybe ridiculous. I'll get sick. Who knows?
Nope.
I'm actually honestly shocked that I'm not sick right now because I was at this reptile show surrounded by like 20,000 people. I was fully expecting to be sick by now, but so far, touch wood. Yeah. I'm not sick yet.
Yeah. Touch wood. Or don't say, just say knock on wood. Why would you say touch wood? That's the weirdest thing to say, dude.
Is that what people say? Knock on wood.
No, people say knock on wood. What's wrong with you? Touch wood.
They say both.
God, come on. No, they don't. No, they don't. They
can
don't
somebody in the
all,
chat talk about this, please? Someone back me up here. No one's going to back me up.
But no. We'll let people know because, exactly. Nobody says touch wood.
Oh, Kitty's just buried me.
Yeah, dude. God. Yeah, just bringing some real up in here, you know. But we're gonna
listen,
let people know. About
Matt knows it's because I'm British. Remember, that's what the Brits say.
God, yeah, they're wrong. There's a reason. There's a reason we took this country from them in the first place.
Oh,
of crap
God,
like that.
We're gonna go into that.
And the redcoats, you know.
Oh no. All right. Well, anyway,
oh God, I love
is there anything else upcoming that you would like to speak about, Phil?
Let's see. No, I think that's it. I think that's about it, man. Honestly, we have some cool sponsorships and things that we've signed some contracts for that we're getting ready to like implement that are going to allow us to do some fun things. We have kind of a dream, like a bit of a fantasy about getting out to Appalachia to hunt salamanders and to sort of document this, photograph them, and do a podcast around it. And our hope is that some of these sponsorships and partnerships that we're, basically a Project Herpeticulture trip, you know, herping trip. Mm-hmm. And, maybe in a perfect world, we can organize it in such a way where it's sort of like open-ended, where we can get other people who might want to join us to come kind of meet up with us and have some fun. We'd have to probably go through some vetting, like Matt probably wouldn't be allowed to go just because. But, you know, like, God, I love trolling that dude from afar. It's a great time. But, something like that, because, you know, all of this stuff that we have coming up is all is basically I think this is a good way to put this. some people are the kinds of individuals who the way they get through the world is they set clear, well-defined goals and chase after them. Mm-hmm. Right. And some people, me people, and I think Roy people, but also I'm speaking mostly me people, kind of have vague directions that we kind of envision ourselves going, like very vague, or not even vague, just sort of blurry ideas about where we might be headed and with what we're doing. And then the more that life happens and the more opportunity presents itself, the more clear some of those pictures become. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way my life has gone. That's just always the way my life has been. I'm not very good at having a very rigid, clear goal set out in front of me about 50 miles that way. And it's like, all right, I'm just going to run that way. Like, it's not who I am as a person. And so a lot of these things that we're talking about that we're working on, they're like that. They're a little more fluid. They're not so rigidly defined, but we have an idea of where we want to go. And, you know, so getting there is a little bit, destination herpeticulture. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. And, you know, some of the stuff is also stuff, we'd love to partner with, oh my God, why how am I blanking on his name right now? Oh my God, what is happening here?
Give me a clue.
It's him and his lady Laura. They could do their herp trips in like Morocco and Madagascar.
HDRP. Brian Minna. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. So like setting up, mm-hmm. putting something together with them so we can go visit some obscure parts of the world. Like, because we really, I think like one of the next things we want to do with this podcast is like start peppering in like expeditions, like stuff where mm-hmm. we go to places to herp and document what we're doing and talk about it and talk about our experience, because it's one of the things that makes us very, very happy. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think that's kind of the, like the big thing to hit, to knock off the docket for 2024. But, you know, I also have a son coming this year, so
yeah, you
we
do.
We might be a little bit pressed for time in terms of when we can make that happen. So March, Appalachia in March, Roy. We could also do some fly fishing too if you want.
I don't know. Appalachia in March might be pretty cold and snowy. I don't know. It depends. Oops. Depends on where, I guess. But who knows? So. Fly fishing sounds great, man. I'd love to do that anytime.
Soon enough. We'll make that happen. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Some things yeah. coming down the pipeline. Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully we can do some more fun stuff as well. Like, I think that like trying to do like a Southwest trip would be really nice as well at some point. I don't know mm-hmm. if this is the year, but that's something that's
Zona,
on my
baby.
Mind. Yeah.
Zona.
Yeah.
We got to go see them Chucks, Collards, Granite Spinies, Night Lizards, Gilas, Rattlesnakes, and King Snakes. Let's go. Coach Whips.
Well, and I still like Alan's vision of Herpeton in the desert, you know?
I know.
That's kind of more my speed.
I know.
Herpin and then campfire time. But yeah. If we can make that happen, yeah. I would like to do that.
He messaged me recently and was like, dude, I got a whole bunch of these four-wheelers and they're great for getting from one place to another herping really fast. And I was like, God damn it, dude.
Alan,
I'm not trying to die, dude. I'm not trying to die. If I get on one of those things, it'll be the last thing I do.
No, you'll be fine. Just don't listen to Alan.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Roy.
Noted.
Yeah, and if you don't know anything about Hog Island boas, you should go look them up. They're really cool. I love Hog Island boas.
They're very
cute.
Cool.
They're so funny. A little small. Anyway. I think this is good for this. Are you ready to?
Yeah, yeah.
To call it for the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for tuning into our first live. I think that we'll keep doing this occasionally in the future. I don't know if it'll be just me and Phil. We probably will have some in the future with a guest and all of that. Yeah. This was kind of last minute. We were like, we should do something. We're going to do something for like a Pomona recap anyway. And obviously our plans for Pomona were a little bit different than we anticipated. So thanks for those who tuned in, supported, and made the chat a lively place.
Yeah. We have some great guests coming up for the show, by the way. Really, really interesting, fun guests. Yeah. I'm really pumped. And
I'm excited.
I'm pumped about all of them, but there's one in particular who I'm really, really excited to talk to because he's a friend of mine and we got a lot of good stuff, cool stuff to talk about. So yeah, Matt's all right. Not invited at all. Just not at all.
Poor Matt.
Thank you guys. Thank you all
y'all
for coming and attending with us. Thank you so much.
All right, I'm gonna hit the button.
All right, hit the button.
Call it good. Peace out, everybody.